Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Tonight, I'm very proud to announce that one of 2021's projects will be the establishment of an Ateneum, and we're going to be starting with setting up a platform for Light of Olympus shows, and tonight we're launching that with host Tony Merzwicki and his segment Living Elenismos. Greetings and welcome, Tony. How are you?
Hi, Hercules. How are you? It's wonderful to be on your show.
It's wonderful to have you here, and I'm looking forward to the lore that you will share with us today.
You're far too kind. I wanted to start off by mentioning that in last month's show, we were supposed to have had Oracle Hecataios, who's the Order of Strixcraft, ancient Greek magic for the modern witch, on the show. And unfortunately, things sort of happened at the last minute, and he was unable to turn up. However, did manage to meet up with him online, and we conducted an interview, and I uploaded the interview late last night. It's on my Pathios blog.
Yes, I
and
saw it.
It basically covers all the material that I would have covered had he come onto the show. I wanted him to explain the difference between what he practices and calls Strixcraft and normal witchcraft. So he gave an explanation for that. And also he talks about how he views magic. He talked about how he had his initiation with Hecate. And one thing that I found really interesting is that when he thought back on it, he actually pinpointed an incident when he was 8 years old, when he was first called by Hecate. And that's one of these things that seems to come up time and time again, that if you look at where you are in this moment in time and you look back on the events that brought you to this moment in time, you can actually see that there were subtle things in your past that were bringing you exactly to where you are now. So it's interesting that he managed to trace it. Yeah, it's interesting that he managed to trace it back to an incident when he was watching a particular movie when he was 8 years old. And then he talks about the various visions that he received when he first brought Hecate into his life. And then he talks about how it became her oracle. And he finishes off by giving a sample ritual. And the thing is that looking at the ritual, there are authentic Greek elements in it. His use of calling Hecas, Hecas, Este Bibeloi comes from the Golden Dawn. He calls to the four directions, which is Wiccan, but it's also in the Golden Dawn. So it's very much a hybrid system which he's put together, and it's obviously quite effective. And so it's a demonstration of how important it is to come up with something that works for you. And he also has a group that he works rituals with, and it works very well for them. So summarizing, I'd say that the book is excellent for people who want to work with Hecate and want to follow in his footsteps. But it's also good for those who are seeking inspiration and want to perhaps work with another deity or want to work with Hecate, but in a slightly different way. So they can have a look at what he's accomplished and then go off in a different direction. And one thing I do want to share from the interview is I asked him if he had any parting words, and these are actually quite powerful, so I was going to read them out to you.
Sure.
It begins and ends with you, your approach to the gods and the divine self within. We are all expressions of the star goddess Nyx, and our journey to know ourselves is her journey. As you walk this path, know that altars and tools are not necessary. Just be open to the spirits of nature around you. They will speak to you and guide you through your intuition. Devote your time. Be ecologically mindful. Pray and talk to your gods and spirits. Remember that we are connected.
Very nicely said, and those are all profound thoughts, well worth thinking about and considering. And very true. This is for everybody, the path of spirituality, a very individual journey. And if you follow the resonance, you'll find something that works for you. And until you find your own path, trying different things is really the only way to see what you resonate with and what speaks to you and what doesn't speak to you. And many of the systems that people work with are hybrid systems, borrowed elements. Like, for instance, here in New Jersey, there's combinations of Wicca that are combined with Buddhism. And, you know, you encounter all very hybrid paths.
Yeah. And as they say, the proof of the pudding's in the eating. If a system works, it's a good system, and it deserves to be worked with.
I find that that's true on all paths. Like, as you know, we share passion for exercising. And I'm sharing my particular path for the Tenafly Mayor's Wellness Campaign's 21 Quest for Optimal Wellness. And people are going to watch me try things and drop them if they're not working, or, you know, elaborate on them or integrate them, because nothing works. Even if you find something that works, I found, and even in exercise or in diet, it doesn't mean it's going to work forever. And I have type 2 diabetes, so I know the diet, and I'm continuously wrestling with that. I'll find something that works, and things will be fine for a while. Sometimes it'll be weeks, sometimes it'll be months, sometimes it'll be years. And then all of a sudden, what I was doing will not work anymore. So the quest begins again, you know, to reexamine everything I'm eating, the proportions of the macronutrients, the micronutrients, until I find the new way of being. And with exercise as well, when I was younger, I used to like lifting the very heavy weights, and I liked the dumbbells and the barbells and the machines and things like that. And now I'm finding that the bands do it for me, and I get better results with the bands at this point in my life than I am with the free weights. So it's an adventure that never ends. And with spirituality, I could say very much the same. As I've grown, my ideas about things have changed. My experiences have gotten more rich and varied and complex. So I see my spiritual path as forever evolving. I don't see myself as ever ceasing in this journey, at least during this lifetime.
That is incredibly well put. I think all of life is an organic process where we have to react in a proactive sort of way to whatever we see happening around ourselves. And I've seen exactly the same things happening for me. I don't have diabetes, so my situation isn't as critical as yours. But as I've gotten older, I found that high-carb diets don't work for me. At first,
right.
I tried switching over to gluten-free carbs, and then even those weren't working. And now I seem to do best on a diet that's moderately high in protein, moderately high in fats, and very low in carbs. That seems to work very, very well for me. And it's the same thing with the weights. You have to be sensible. You can't lift as much as you did when you were younger. You have to drop them. Even you remember Frank Zane?
Yes.
In interviews, he has stated that one of his biggest regrets is always going heavy. He felt that if he had gone a little bit lighter, he would have been gentler on his joints and tendons and ligaments and everything else. The body is not a machine. When you're young, you think you're bulletproof. You think you can get away
right.
You think you can get away with training very heavy constantly. You think you can get away with excesses in diets and training aids and the like. But as you get older, you get a little bit more sensible. You get wrapped across the knuckles. by life, and you realize that you have to start being more sensible. But just going back to Oracle Hecataios talking about how unimportant tools are, it reminded me of a friend of mine who was a big part of my path in the mid-90s. He was of Greek extraction, and he was living with his father at the time, and he was very much into Franz Baden, a little bit of chaos magic, a little bit of left-hand path stuff. But he knew that if he tried to set up an altar in his room, he would run foul of his father. So he created a ritual space in the astral, and he would do all his workings in the astral. So if you're not as adept at working in the astral as he was, then you can visualize having tools. Because when it comes down to it, connection with the gods comes from the heart.
Correct.
And that was something that I learned in the mid-90s from this guy. But he was forced on a particular path by having a father who was a staunch Greek Orthodox practitioner who would not have put up with him practicing magic in his room.
I found that in my own journey that imagined practices are just as powerful as performed practices as well, you know, and that the imagination, the astral faculty is a very powerful thing. And there's a lot of research, especially in exercise, that reinforces that the body has a difficult time distinguishing between the real and the imagined. So,
absolutely. I've read much the same thing about high-level athletes. They spend just as much time visualizing themselves engaging in their particular sport as they do actually practicing it. And to make your visualizations optimally effective, you engage as many of the senses as possible. So say if you're playing on grass, you have to smell the grass. You have to feel the grass underneath your feet. You have to feel the warm sun on your skin. You engage as many of your senses as possible. You make the visualization as real as possible. And that actually optimizes your sporting performance. And it's what high-level athletes do. And even when you're practicing rituals and the like, I was in a situation where I needed to practice rituals at work. When I was doing office work, we had interview rooms. So I would go into an interview room, and this was at a time when I was still doing the Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Pentagram. So I couldn't actually go through the motions in case anyone peered through. I would just sit there and I would visualize myself performing the Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Pentagram as a banishing, and then I'd start my invocations at that point. It was quite easy for me to get away with because I had a couple of Muslims working with me, so they would go into the interview rooms to pray a couple of times a day as well.
Uh-huh.
So they just looked at me as another weirdo who'd be going off and praying or doing something like that. And I managed to get away with it. It was a particular point on my path where I needed to do multiple rituals 4 times a day. If you can't get into the astral consciously, at least visualize yourself going through the motions, and that works as well as doing things physically.
Very, very true.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's okay. There are practices, too, that are very ancient, like, for instance, in the Hekalot literature with the Merkabas, which
yes.
I guess you could compare them to, like, UFO type of experiences. And if you use those to do astral work, in a very short period of time, you discover that it's totally unnecessary because in the astral, you can imagine yourself anywhere you need to be. And if you're good at visualizing, you're there. So the vehicle was a good way of, you know, practicing the process until it got strong. But you don't need the vehicle. You can just place yourself there, and you're there within a thought, because that's how the astral works. And then the vehicle part of it, the Merkaba part of it, comes in handy if you're doing group work with other people, the same way the shamanic longboat, you know, would be used You could get a bunch of people to visualize being in a particular space, and then you could use that shared space in a variety of ways that you couldn't, without the use of that vehicle. But that working with the astral makes it a lot easier to use your imagination. And we live in imagination. If we look around ourselves, everything that surrounds us has been imagined and arranged by us in some way that stamps it with our unique creativity. But everything is imagined. So we live in the imagination. It's a very powerful place to be. And so much of our existence, what we call physical life, is actually imaginal. It's astral life.
But I really believe that before getting into workings like that, you do need to be doing things physically. Because when you do things physically, you can actually engage more of your imagination. So, for instance, if you're working with a particular god, there's a color aspect to the god. I'm thinking in particular the planetary god. So there's a color that you can be working with. There's a fragrance that you can be working with. So you can either burn the incense or anoint your third eye with the appropriate essential oil. And there's also a gemstone that can be worn on your finger. Apollonius of Tyana had a stone for each day of the week. I do the same thing whenever I do my planetary workings. So bringing those three factors in, the gemstone, the color, and the fragrance, makes your overall invocation much more powerful. So then when you do start to visualize yourself doing these workings, because you can't physically go through the motions, they're far more effective because you've already got all that inside your consciousness. Yeah, it's the same thing with the function of ritual robes. Is when you put on ritual robes, then you're not just putting on a robe, you're putting on a mindset. So you're preparing yourself for a ritual. So once you start practicing that, it gets to the stage where even if you don't really feel in the mood for doing a ritual, as soon as the robe comes on, it's like bang, it's like a little switch goes off and you're primed and ready. You can then go into the ritual. So these things are, they're complementary type practices, but ultimately, none of that is necessary. You can visualize yourself doing all that, and it's a matter of forming a connection between your heart and the divine. That's what it all comes down to.
That's very true. And the appropriate outfits and practices reinforce that. Like I'm thinking in terms of bodybuilding, which for those who aren't magically inclined or ritually inclined, you have all these tools. You have the weights, you have whatever you wear when you work out. For me, it's a t-shirt and shorts. That's my workout garb. You have protein shakes, you have vitamins, and for a lot of this, the actual efficacy of it is in question. Or in the dispute, where opinions that you're offered range from it's very effective to it's a waste of money. But I find that using them as tools to get you in a particular type of mindset makes them invaluable. So even though the protein shake might be a placebo, placebos are very effective. On their own, they're that powerful in our imagination where they can affect, I believe, 70% effectiveness rate with placebo alone. So it's part of the culture and the mindset that you need to do weightlifting. So in that sense, the same thing with the stones for every day of the week and for the fragrances and for the colors. You're right. They put you in a particular state of mind. And they make what you're doing much more powerful, and they fuel it so that whatever virtues they might have on their own, it doesn't matter. As long as they engage the imagination and they empower the mind, you'll get a powerful result from them.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with you about the protein shakes.
We're having a conversation.
The thing is, yeah. It's just I've been doing weights for a very long time, and the thing is that one thing that your muscles need is protein. And the best way for it to for your body to for your muscles to absorb protein is to get 30 grams of protein at each sitting, you know, every 2 to 3 hours. So you do need that protein coming in. And some people argue that real food is better for you, but protein shakes are incredibly convenient. So if you have 2 or 3 meals a day, make sure that the rest of your meals are either protein shakes or protein bars so that you're getting your protein coming in. You find that if you back off on the protein, you start to shrink. Otherwise, if your body requires amino acids, it'll start to catabolize muscle and you undermine all the good that you're doing. The thing is that everything's a synergistic process. You need to be exercising correctly. You need to be eating right. You need to be resting. You need to choose the right set of exercises so that you don't injure yourself. And at the end of the day, training itself is a stress and adaptation process. So you stress the muscles and they adapt by getting bigger. But what I found is that that sort of approach works well for the first couple of years maybe, but then you can't keep increasing your strength. There's only as much weight as you can lift without cheating. So if you can't increase the stress, what you do is that you change the stress. So you change the exercise that you do. You change the order of what you're doing. You keep the body guessing. And that way you can still keep improving. You know, once you get to our age, because I think we're both about the same vintage, then the gains tend to be far slower, but at least you can hold on to what you have and you can age gracefully. And I think as you hold on to what you have, you look better. You look better. You feel better about yourself. Also, weight-bearing activity is incredibly important for bone density.
Yes.
So you're less likely to come down with osteoporosis as you get older. You really need to be doing some sort of physical activity. Our bodies are designed to walk. Walking is good, but yeah, it's good for the heart, it's good for the cardiovascular system, but you also need some sort of weight-bearing activity as well. Personally, I prefer low-impact cardio machines to walking. I don't like to stress my joints too much, but that's just a personal thing. And for those people listening who think that we're going off track, the ancient Greeks were very much into physical culture. You know, their gymnasiums, working out and everything else. The wealthy classes spent their time, so they spent their days working out in gyms and philosophizing. So I don't think we're off topic at all.
No, we're not. And I remember years ago when I had a podcast in Pennsylvania, Donald Tyson was an occasional guest on those podcasts. And he was also into weightlifting. We used to have these types of conversations fairly often. Aleister Crowley, in one of his books, he had written like how writing is a form of magic and the pen is a tool and so forth. So we were talking about weights and things like that in our conversation. But it's very, very true. And I have on my walls, like right here where I'm sitting, where I have my office and my little setup for the podcast, I have posters of Hercules all over the place, and I have Greek statues because I'm Greek, but most of them are Hercules and other Olympians. And these things also, because this is where I work out as well, I see these images, and the images have associations, and they stimulate my imagination. And because I've spent so much of my life studying what the ancients did, I know that what you say is fact, you know, so in my mind's eye, I'm back there, you know, at the gymnasium, you know, where they honored Hermes and Hercules and Apollo, and, you know, because these were the Olympians that embodied and exemplified the physical ideal. These are kind of like the stones and the scents and the colors. You know, they're used in very much the same way, in that my exercising isn't only a physical thing, but it becomes a spiritual practice as well. Like, for instance, my mind works in an attention deficit disorder type of way. Hartman in his books described how that type of brain works, and I found it very helpful in understanding my brain and being able to use it more effectively. But with the weightlifting, even with the bands, using the heavier bands, you can injure yourself if you're not paying 100% attention. So the weightlifting becomes a meditation, and it becomes a way of focusing. And also you're visualizing what type of body you'd like to build. And depending on whether you want to look like a weightlifter, whether you want to look like a runner or a swimmer or whatever you want to look like, there's different gestures that you make and different tools that you use and different intensities and different visualizations. So I find that act of transformation very magical and also very spiritual as well. So the categories that usually separate these things kind of dissolve when I'm working out every day. And it includes my meals. If I have the peace and the time, then my eating becomes something that adds to this process of growth and transformation. So that too becomes a ritual act.
Yes. And actually, many spiritual practices extol the virtues of being in the moment. And if you think about it, when you're exercising, you're lifting a weight, you're totally in the moment. You're focusing on that weight. You're making sure that your form is correct. You're making sure that the muscles are working through their full range of motion. You're totally in the moment. And it's the same thing when you're eating. Ideally, you should be in the moment as well. You should be focusing on absorbing all the nutrients in the food. Some people take it one step further. They actually think of the steps that went to bringing that food to you. So you think of the farmers who planted the food and then harvested it, and then the people who then transported it to you, brought it to warehouses, and the warehouses then took it to shops for you to buy. You can actually incorporate that as well if you want to, but just being mindful of what you're eating, absorbing the nutrients. And there's also an element of gratitude as well, being grateful to the people who brought the food to you. And that is especially important at this time, you know, during COVID-19, which is still running rampant. All these people who are still working in the fields, they're taking their own health in their own hands. They could easily come down and get sick, and they don't have the sort of benefits that many wealthier people do have. They're forced to keep working. So I'm very grateful to the sacrifices that they make to enable us to keep eating. I mean, even though we've been ravaged by COVID-19, there's still food in the stores. We still have everything that we need. No one's going hungry yet, although there are financial issues. A lot of people have lost their jobs. Unemployment's just about to run out. So things are going to get a lot tougher. I'm hoping with the new government things start to improve a little bit, but we'll see. And that's actually something I wanted to segue into COVID-19, because for me that's probably the most important, well, if not the most important issue affecting us, and one of the most important issues. You've probably heard that there's a new coronavirus variant that's been identified in the UK, which can spread up to 70% faster. So what that means is that the reproduction number, which is the number of individuals that an infected person transmits to, has increased from 1.1 to 1.5, and that's a 70% increase. It doesn't appear to be any deadlier, but it's spreading a hell of a lot faster. And there are also new variants in South Africa and also in Nigeria. Yes. And it's expected that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines will be effective against the new UK strain. And the UK has a new vaccine, the AstraZeneca vaccine. And that should be approved this week. And they think that that will also be effective. So the vaccines do appear to be generally safe. However, there have been a few allergic reactions that have been well publicized. And the vaccines are really polarizing people. There are those who are really, really wanting them, and there are other people who are very suspicious of them. So they do seem to be polarizing society. But regardless of whether you want the vaccine or not, the vaccines basically prime your immune system to function specifically against the COVID-19 virus. So either way, you need to have a rock-solid immune system. And I've said before that the three most important nutrients that we need to combat COVID-19 are vitamin D. And there are recent studies that show that 9 out of 10 COVID-19 deaths could have been prevented if people had had vitamin D levels. And it also seems that if you're dark-skinned, you need even more vitamin D. Vitamin C is also essential, and there are some studies that have shown that vitamin C can have very good benefits in the outcome of an illness. And zinc is incredibly important as well. So it stops viral replication in multiple ways. So it prevents the virus from hijacking your DNA, prevents the virus from replicating, and it also prevents the virus from entering every cell. So zinc is incredibly important. And one thing that I found is that zinc is actually very difficult to track down in stores. It seems to sell out much quicker than all other supplements. Because those people who believe in hydroxychloroquine believe that they should be taking it with zinc. Those people who are taking quinine, either on its own or in tonic water, are taking it with zinc. Also, I've been hearing more and more about quercetin, and quercetin works very well with zinc as well. So quercetin is a natural bioflavonoid, and it opens up the cell in your body so that the zinc can get inside your cells where it works. So basically, the quercetin optimizes the effectiveness of zinc. So, you know, whether you're wanting the vaccine or not, you need to have a rock-solid immune system. So those four nutrients, incredibly important, and also you need exercise, fresh air, and sunshine.
Yes, is quercetin available over the counter, or?
I've actually been looking. I tend to do a lot of shopping in some of the cheaper stores, just to keep expenses down. And I haven't seen it. I'm sure if I went to one of the more expensive places like Whole Foods or Mother's, I'd probably get it. I'm thinking of getting it online. That'd be the cheapest way of doing it. But I keep coming across more and more references to it. And apparently it's used in Thailand quite extensively. So it's one of their products. So here you have an entire country using quercetin as part of their protocol in combating COVID-19. So I'm a great believer in natural remedies whenever possible. So that's something that I do want to be adding to my daily regimen. Vitamin D is very cheap, very available. Vitamin D is very cheap, very available. Zinc is cheap normally, but it's just getting harder and harder to track down. One thing that I've noticed is we've got these discount grocery stores here called Grocery Outlet, and if you see it on the shelves, if there's three or four bottles there, grab them, because if you come back the following day, they're not going to be there. That's basically what I did. Yeah, so I have some zinc here available, but I keep my eyes open for it, and if more turns up, I will be grabbing it as well, just to make sure that I have some for every day. I first started playing around with zinc many, many years ago, but, you know, back in the 90s, and I turned a few people onto it, and all of them found that it reduced the severity of their colds.
Yes. Like
in winter, people would come down with colds, but zinc would just help them recover a lot quicker. And I think, you know, the lozenges are nice, but, you know, they're obviously not going to give you as high dosage as a zinc pill would.
I've increased my intake of zinc and vitamin D3 as well. And some people have recommended selenium, so I take a little bit more of that occasionally.
Okay, you're not the first person to mention selenium. I just don't come across too many references to it. But like I said, I've got my big three at the moment. I want to introduce quercetin and I probably should have another look at selenium. I did get some selenium take. I didn't really notice much difference. And then when I ran out, when the bottle finished and I stopped taking it, I didn't really notice too much. But maybe I should look into it a little bit more.
I had the same experience with the selenium. I had tried it once before, and I try things and I'll stop and see what happens. And so far, very few things I stop, I notice any effect. One of the things that I found works very effectively for me is Ocuvite for my eyes. If I'm not taking Ocuvite, which has lutein in it, I find my eyes tend to get blurry after a while and it's difficult to read. But if I start taking the recommended dosage of Ocuvite within days, all my eye problems clear up. So that I know works very well. Some of the other things I don't really notice. I stopped taking electrolytes now, and I'm beginning to notice various types of problems that I wasn't having before. So I'm going to start taking the electrolytes again. Zinc has a noticeable result. I could tell that the zinc is having an effect on me within a few days. And I started magnesium recently, and that seems to be working very well.
Yeah, I've heard good things about magnesium as well. It's also a very good relaxant. So
yes.
People use it to calm down and even almost as a sleep aid. So it's wonderful stuff.
I like doing dream work, so I've been, I've been trying B6 recently. Chamomile works really well. B6 seems to be working very well. Somebody recommended valerian, so I got a bottle of that, and that's on my list of to tries. Right now, I'm still playing with the B6 and the chamomile.
B6 is supposed to be very good for dream recall.
Yes. It's good for sleep too, for getting to sleep faster.
Okay.
And melatonin, I'm finding that works too. I never experimented with melatonin until recently. That came up in a few conversations about dreams. And again, I love working in my dreams. I don't like being inactive, not even at night. So.
I take melatonin before going to sleep as well. Again, it's something that's very inexpensive these days. Would you believe, I don't know what it's like now, but when I used to live back in Sydney, it was illegal.
Yes.
There are a number of drugs that are available over-the-counter here that are illegal back in Sydney, and one of them was melatonin. We had a lot of airline stewards and stewardesses coming into the country because, as you can imagine, they would find themselves in different time zones. So
right.
It would be difficult for them to get to sleep. So what melatonin does is it resets the body clock. So they would take these to get home. But, they fly into Sydney and customs would search them. It's like, oh, no, you can't have this. This is illegal. So they'll be confiscating their melatonin, even though it was just available over the counter. Another thing that was illegal back home was DHEA.
Yeah,
DHEA it was a prescription item. So you had to have it prescribed for you. And whereas here, you can go on anywhere and buy a bottle of DHEA.
Yeah, I remember here, too, it wasn't available for a while, DHEA, and then it became something that you can get over the counter. And bodybuilders swore by it. So, I experimented with it. I didn't have any good effect, oil effect. And I tried it on and off a few times. And so that was one of the ones I just dropped.
I take a little bit every day. I figure it's got to be doing a little bit of good. But again, I haven't noticed too much from it. But for me, you have to remember, it's like the forbidden fruit. Because I couldn't have had it back home. And if I was back in Sydney, I'd be really wanting to try it. Whereas here, because it's widely available, I'll just think, oh, what the heck? I'll go off and get a bottle and just drop one pill every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are differences in what's legal in certain countries to what's in others. Like, for instance, I don't know what it's like, but a couple of decades ago when I was living in Sydney, you could actually get codeine from a pharmacy. It will be a low dosage, but you could get codeine either with aspirin or with paracetamol. And I remember reading about someone who went into a pharmacy, got some codeine without a script, and then flew to Greece, and then got into a hell of a lot of trouble because the stuff is illegal without a script in Greece.
Well, here they used to give you – I used to work in hospitals for much of my career. And I remember working in hospitals, and when you went to employee health because you weren't feeling well, they would give you codeine because codeine, you would take the codeine and you didn't feel better, but you didn't care about not feeling well. That seemed to be the the effect of the codeine. But I remember they would just give it out like it was nothing, and then it became something verboten, and they wouldn't give it to you at all. But for years, any ailment you had, any complaint you had, they'd give you codeine because that would get you back to work fairly quickly. Yeah, not feeling better, but not caring that you felt bad.
Back in the day, before I discovered the effectiveness of Feverfew for migraines, I would use codeine for my migraines. You know, when you've got a full-blown migraine and you can't look at bright lights, noises affect you, you just want to curl up in a fetal position in a dark room and die. So I would take codeine, go to sleep, and by the following morning it'd be gone. That was how I would tackle my migraines. And then I heard about Feverfew, started taking Feverfew, and then I threw away the codeine, and I also used to play around with ergotamine tartrate, which was a prescription item. What I found with that was that I'd take it for a migraine, and the migraine would disappear in about 20 minutes. However, a couple of days later, it'd be back. And in my case, what I found was that migraines were part of the way my body dealt with stress. So if I subjected myself to stress, like, for example, if I had a lot of exams to get through, I would get through the exams, and then after the last exam, I'd have a killer migraine. So It was like the migraine was my body's way of dealing with stress. But once I started taking Feverfew, I would only get as far as the photophobia stage, you know, sensitivity to bright lights. It would not proceed beyond that. So it doesn't work for everyone, but I'm one of the lucky ones that it does work for. And it used to be $10 a bottle. Now it's $13 or $14 a bottle. And a bottle lasts you a month. And if you have a full-blown migraine, you would give anything to make it stop.
Really?
So $13 or $14 for a month of no migraines is an absolute bargain. So it's one of the things I always travel with. I can't leave home without my Feverfew.
I don't get migraines, but I know several people who do. So I will recommend it to them, and they could try it. Because I haven't heard them talk about Feverfew. So that's
Don't bother with the capsules. Just go for a liquid extract. So you can get a number of liquid extracts, either tinctures or liquid extracts. You can get them. I go for the organic ones, and you just take a quarter of a dropper or something like that. Now, the way that Feverfew works is it doesn't give you symptomatic relief. So it's not like with normal medicine where you take it and it makes the symptoms go away. Feverfew has to build up. It accumulates in the system. So you find that after taking continuously for a couple of weeks, all of a sudden your migraines are going away. And I found that after a month of taking it continuously, the migraines had stopped. And I sort of kept it up for another month, and then I realized I don't need my ergotamine tartrate anymore, so that went into the bin. If I have a choice between a drug and a herb that does the same thing, I'll go for the herb each time. I feel much safer taking herbs.
I'm the same way. I would much rather deal with it mentally first, with meditation or some other relaxation practice, and then if that doesn't work, a vitamin or an herb, I will go for next. And very rarely will I go for a medication. And if I'm on a medication, my first question is, how soon can I get off of this off of this medication, and I'll do what I
Yes.
need to do to eventually not be taking a medication.
Exactly.
Now, we were talking again about vitamins and about exercise, but this holds true of most people I know, and they're not only their physical bodily needs, but also their spiritual needs, their mental needs. They experiment a lot. People are very serious about, like, optimal wellness. We're talking about now. We'll do these type of things. They'll try different types of exercises. They'll try different types of foods. They'll try different types of supplements. And continuously experiment until they find the balance that works for them at that particular time, and then they'll make modifications if need be. But in living traditions, it is the same, and I found that this is what differentiates people who consider themselves as religious versus people who consider themselves as following a more magical path. In that,
mm-hmm.
again, this is a generalization, but a lot of times people who consider themselves religious follow formula, and they don't deviate from the formula, and they don't really talk about the results of the formula, whereas people who are more magical tend to be more experimental, and although they might use a formula to a degree, they're not overly fixated on the formula itself. Rather, the formula becomes a tool for attaining a particular end.
I would agree with that totally. The thing is that even when you start off on a magical path, you get given a formula, as you put it. So you follow that. And once you start getting results, you can then tweak it.
Right.
You can see what's going to make it either work better or more effective, where you can direct it towards particular ends. But you're always tweaking things. It's more of an art than a science. There is an aspect of science as well, because if you perform a particular ritual, it gives you a result, and hopefully it should be a reproducible result. But the thing is, it's an art insofar as you have to find out what works best for you. And
right.
I can't remember if I told you this story or not, but I did an invocation of Hecate in Ohio, and I was going to work with a lunar god, but I didn't announce what god I was going to work with, because I gave people in the workshop a choice of three lunar gods that I could work with. There was either Selene, Hecate, or Thoth, and they chose Hecate. Now, in the room next to mine were some friends of mine who were part of a Wiccan group. And we talked about the event afterwards, and they felt a Hecate energy coming in straight off. So the point was that even though they were working Wiccan rites, we were still working with the same deity. They recognized Hecate when she came in. So even though I was working with BGM texts, I was keeping the whole thing as authentic as possible, and they were using Wiccan techniques, we were still working with the same energies. And that was a very profound moment for me, because it made me realize that I wasn't doing anything better than anyone else. It's a case of I was doing what worked best for me.
For you,
and
right.
I resonate with working with PGM texts. I like stuff that's either ancient or from late antiquity, whereas other people prefer things that are far more modern. And nothing is better than anything else. It's what is best
Correct.
For you. There was an Israel Regardi text where he talked about you can try making a ritual work, and it's a really ornate, elaborate ritual, but that will not work as well for you as something very simple that you wrote yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What it is, you have to find what resonates with you, what works for you.
And that's experimentation. And it takes, in the beginning, until you know what you're doing, following a formula. I'm currently working with the rays. They were known in antiquity, and the theosophists took them and developed them, quite elaborately. Lately, due to many synchronicities, I've started working with them again. And I created a Facebook group for others who may be interested in that particular journey. And as I was gathering material together, I realized that the systems I was sharing, I don't work with any of these the way that the people who are making the videos or writing the articles or working with them. But in the process of learning to work directly with these energies and their intelligences, I had to learn through, basically, again, learning about all the stuff, seeing what resonated, experimenting. So it's really the only way to teach. And as I'm not currently in a place where I can sit down and spend several months and write my own experiences with arrays, I'll just refer people to the literature that's out there. And if they experiment, they'll eventually find their own way.
That's by far the best thing. I found that people that have worked with the system that I work with, like, I'm not sure if anyone has actually copied exactly what I do. They tend to pick bits and pieces of what appeals to them and they incorporate it into their own workings. Mm-hmm. And that's just fine. Everyone has to find their own path, just as I found mine, just as you found yours.
And that's part of the greatness about life's adventure. It's finding your way. It's like when you finally identify your deity or your deities, that resonance, when it clicks, it makes life into something totally different than it was before you get that click. But the click comes in different ways than different people. And it's not going to happen the same way for me as it will for you or for anybody else. And you find with a lot of the realizations that you always knew it, but on a mental level rather than on a gut level or even like an entire being level, that certainty that you get. It's a wonderful thing, and a lot of it can't really be described in words. The person has to have had the understanding to understand what you're talking about, and if they didn't, they might intellectually get what you're saying, but they won't get it till they get it, and that's okay. That's the way it should be.
That's actually true of most things in life. If you've been through some sort of crisis situation, people can tell you, I understand. But the fact is they don't understand unless they've been through a similar sort of crisis. But
right.
I think it's even more true on a spiritual part, because we're dealing things that are beyond the experience of most people. So we've only got a few minutes left. So I just wanted to refer people to a blog which I wrote a few months ago, and it was on dealing COVID-19 in the manner of the ancient Greeks. And I think it's still just as relevant now as it was when I first wrote it. The thing is, COVID is here for quite some time, even though they've got the vaccine out. Some people are embracing it, some people aren't. I heard an interview with Fauci just recently, still pushing the idea of herd immunity. And at one stage, he was saying we needed 90% of people vaccinated to achieve herd immunity. Now he's backing that down to about, I think, 70% or 75% or 80%. But I don't understand why people who are naturally immune or asymptomatic need to be vaccinated, but that's obviously a failing of mine. But the thing is that the god who presided over plagues was Apollo. So I think that all of us should be doing workings to Apollo to protect ourselves from COVID-19. And I actually talked about what Homer had to say about this particular plague that the Greeks had to deal with when they landed in Troy. And it actually talks about them burning the bodies, burning them on pyres, and then getting rid of any sort of, they actually refer to filth, but that probably refers to soiled clothing and utensils. So they're basically trying to purify the area, purify themselves. So they're working hand in hand with the offerings that they made to Apollo. So you have to meet the gods halfway. You don't just pray to Apollo, but you have to meet him halfway. So knowing what we know now, it means Socially distancing. It means washing your hands. It means wearing a mask in public places. So, and again, with washing your hands, my recommendation is you call on hygeia or hygeia.
Mm-hmm.
As you wash your hands with soap and water, you visualize any sort of impurities, any sort of viruses, COVID-19, what have you, washing off your hands down into the sink. So you're actually making the cleansing process more effective. And if you do find yourself being infected with COVID, then you pray to Asclepius for healing, which is what the ancients did. So I wrote a blog on this, dealing with COVID-19 in the manner of the ancient Greeks. And like I said, the information in that blog is just as relevant now as it was then. The thing is that we've got these new variants of COVID-19 that have just sprung up. And as I mentioned before, we've got one in the UK. We've also got two more, South Africa and Nigeria. Viruses will keep mutating. Most mutations aren't particularly nasty, but occasionally some of them make the virus either more transmissible, as they have in this case, or they can even make the virus deadlier than what it is. And for those who take the vaccine, I pray that the vaccine is just as effective for the new strains as it is for the old strains. If not, they're going to have to keep coming up with new vaccines, keep tweaking what they have. But either way, everyone really needs to be working on their immune system. So those four supplements that I mentioned before. Also, I'm going to be looking into selenium because you're not the only one who's mentioned it to me. I did play around with it before. Maybe it's something I should reintroduce into my regimen. But we really need to be looking up.
And since we only have a couple of minutes, how can people find you and tap into your work?
Okay, I have a Facebook page and I also have a Facebook authors page. And I have a blog on Pathos. And so between the three of those, people would have a very good idea of everything that I'm up to. So stay healthy, stay safe, don't take any unnecessary chances. If you do decide to meet up with friends and family for Christmas, wear your mask as much as possible, try to be near open windows. Don't take any unnecessary chances and be mindful of those people who are vulnerable, the elderly and those who are immune system compromised. The only way we're going to get through this is if we get through this together.
Very true and very well stated. Tony, thank you so very much. I look forward to our next conversation, whatever platform it happens on, and regardless of how public it is, you're an awesome individual. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Hercules. Take care.
You too. Happy New Year to you and yours.
Happy New Year to you too, and Athena.
Thank you. Say hi to Janet.
Will do.
Everybody who's joined us, thank you very much for being here. And until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys, amazing adventures, and again, a happy and healthy holiday season. Be well. We're going to close with Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley today. Of the
golden power.